Greetings, pals.
Hey, pals.
Welcome to the podcast, Throw in the Pal. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
And I'm Tom.
This is the podcast where we talk about movies.
We did discuss how that was going to sound before recording.
Hold on. And you got it to the T.
I think kind of.
To the T.
And I'm
Tom.
I just want to say quickly, love it or hate it, we debate it. That's our catchphrase. I'm bringing it in. It's season two, so we've got to have a catchphrase.
That's a great idea.
We didn't discuss that, but that's cool.
So, Marcus, Frank's shirt.
I don't have
love
to...
it, hate it, debate it.
It is a six.
This is an audio medium.
Yeah, but people can imagine you wearing a six shirt. It doesn't take much of a stretch,
I think. One of those illusions where when you stare at it long enough or you twist your eyes a bit, it turns into something.
It's kind of like...
Unfortunately, that's Frank.
Yes. It's kind of like a couch cover on a softcore set
in the 70s. But in the 70s.
I'm going to interrupt. Today we're talking about Saltburn, written and directed by Emerald Fennell, 2023 Saltburn.
What a film.
This is a movie that we watched.
You're using the word movie? Have we talked about this?
Oh, the difference between movie and film?
Yeah.
I used to be more particular about it when I was younger. I remember having it pointed out to me. I was, 100%. When I was like 15 or 16, people would point out to me. They'd be like, do you know you've never said the word movie? And I would throw up a little in my mouth, being like, don't you even like,
and then
say
in there is
around.
like a mama bird.
Yes. It is a film. But yeah, I mean, I think movie is a fine term. And I think Saltburn is certainly... that it technically qualifies.
It absolutely qualifies.
It is a visual bit of content that goes for
what
2 hours is and this 10 some minutes.
The
and
Oxford I think the definition of film.
I hope Saltburn isn't there in the dictionary. I hope it's not a photo
it is
of Barry
the most,
Keoghan,
the most film of
fucking
all film.
A grave, like in the dictionary.
Artistic choices were made, and they made. A statement.
Can we,
and they made us feel emotions.
I know we're jumping way ahead, but I do just want to ask quickly.
Oh,
I think I'm pretty sure,
this.
Marcus, you're the one who may have told me. Mm. Apparently he improvised that. Or like that's the story.
That's,
I didn't look into it.
Yes, that's true. It's in the IMDb trivia. I mean, honestly.
Yeah,
so
like,
he's
you have
like,
to be a moron to not know this.
So
but.
He's like... They're like, cut. And he's like, no, I have something for this. Like, that's how that went on that day on set? That's insane.
And like, everyone sat there awkwardly and he goes, oh, no, closed set. And director's like... Okay.
It's just Barry and the grave.
Yeah.
No one's actually, he didn't know it was
Barry and the grave.
He borrowed a camera for the weekend and brought it back. And he's just like, you're going to want to use that.
So, on Throw in the Pal, not sure if you know, if you ever listen to season one, we rate films out of 11.
Why would you listen to this?
I ask that every day of my life. We rate films out of 11, and Thomas always has a reason.
Yeah.
Thomas better have a reason.
I guess for this one, it's like something to do with the amount of like
something
milligrams per.
Sorry, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
You've had how many months off? 4 or 5 months off. We have had a season break.
This has turned into a lecture.
You've come back in with literally no preparation. All I ask of you,
yeah.
Why would it be out of 11? Give us some fun tidbit.
Straight up answer. Straight up.
Number of micrograms per like milliliter in cum in the bathwater. I don't know. Like
micrograms of milliliters.
Whatever it is when you read like caffeine is this many micrograms. Like it's the amount of cum in the bathwater. What number? 11 if you ran it under. I don't know. That's all I God. I was going to say sperm count, but that I don't even know if that works, right?
Oh, none of those work.
I've been very, very relaxed this last week, as you guys both know. It's been a really chill time for me. Frank, you wouldn't understand, all right? Life changes come along that make things really difficult and they upend your world.
His Marcus, shirt says otherwise. He seems very relaxed.
That's true. He does look relaxed. And Marcus, you get it. You've just gotten a dog recently, so you're excused. I understand you know what pressure is in life when things come along. But Frank, I pray nothing ever happens to you.
So what do you guys rate Saltburn out of 11?
Frank's
this is the worst intro we've ever done.
No. I would argue we've done worse.
Yeah, we absolutely have.
Yep.
But I thought we'd come in here, respectable gentlemen, season two.
No, this is what happens when we take time off.
Do you not want to talk about your babies and how it's been going?
This isn't a podcast about my baby.
It is now.
Who wants to go in early and just say if they loved or hated this film?
I disliked this movie.
Ooh. Oh.
I think it's like a 4.4.
Ooh.
Yeah. I disliked it.
Yeah, okay.
Wah, wah, wah.
Marcus, what did you give it?
I give Saltburn 2023 a 4.
Oh.
Yeah. That was kind of the Jackass.
Yeah. I'm Johnny Knoxville. Welcome to Jackass.
Hi, I'm Barry Keoghan. I'm going to drink some cum.
I'm going to fuck this grave.
This whole movie's a Jackass skit for him. It's a 3-month Jackass skit.
It kind of does. But if he showed up at the next Jackass, I would not be surprised. He seems up for anything.
Uninvited, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Frank, what did you think of this movie?
I liked it. I'm going to give it an 8.
An 8?
What a wow! That's crazy, man.
That's high, actually.
I had a great time.
Double.
Out of 11.
What mark is
it? That's damn. Because I'm twice as good as him.
You rated a film that high.
Oh, last year for sure.
Wait, let me check.
Yeah.
He's right.
He's the record.
I think Jurassic Park 3 was the last one you rated.
Jurassic Park 3 was an 11.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'll give it an 8. I had a really good time. I don't know if I went in thinking all I knew was something happened in the bathtub and Barry Keoghan had sex with a grave. I knew that.
You knew that going in?
Yeah, because of the internet.
Sure.
And
okay.
I
knew nothing going in.
Myself as
not
well.
Not a thing, except for the hype, which was very real about this film.
I had missed the hype.
Had you?
I feel like I had lower expectations. I just knew it was weird. And I think that prepared me well. I had a really fun time. I giggled a lot. I thought it was very silly, like a dark comedy. And I said that today and someone was like, oh, I would say like a romantic thriller almost. And I was like, nah, it's funny. It's weird and funny.
I guess, I mean, it wasn't scary, so you didn't pee your pants. And
almost.
Being that you probably would have fit in with that sort of toxic elite.
First.
Okay. Maybe it was kind of endearing to you.
Sure.
I don't know.
It was nice to see yourself on screen in a movie you're not actually in this time.
It's weird. I mean, I did every time that sunbathing or, you know, just chilling with cocktails in hand and shirt off and whatever. I was like, yep, Frank could be there.
Frank
could be hanging poolside.
Yes. My family do own many castles and I love to make a cocktail.
And he's visited many a bathtub.
So sue me. So sue me.
So sue me that I like to bathe and stay clean. I don't do what this Barry Keoghan kid does.
Can we talk about the bathtub scene?
It's and Kioffen. It's Kioffen.
How often?
Nice. Well done. And we're back.
Oh, that was funny. I want to say that the grossest thing about the bathtub scene to me is that if I was in a bath and I just... I wouldn't jack off in a bath because I'd get cum all over me. Like, be like, I don't want to do it. I'm going to be soaking in my own cum.
I thought that. It's like, does he have a towel that he then...
It's all over me.
Barry, get in here. Where are those supple lips?
Someone clean that up.
But that's my thing. And then afterwards when he's like suckling or slurping at the drain, I was like, yeah, I've already had my moment that I found gross here. Like, I don't find that gross. He's just cleaning.
Yeah,
you know?
Just kicking a man while he's down.
Do you know what is gross? Is like, if you have a bath after maybe a long summer's day, let's...
Where are you going with this?
Well,
I'm curious.
You are bathing off all the
deep memory.
You're bathing off everything of you. All the filth.
Not adding to the pile. Is what you're saying.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, that's no. Yes.
But, like, what's in that bathwater? Cum for one, but what else?
Oh, right. So you think the cum isn't even the worst part?
No, he's going to get dysentery for drinking shit.
Sure.
You know, what if Barry...
He gets, like, athlete's foot in his mouth. Just
he gets athlete's
Jacob
mouth.
Jacob Elordi has filthy feet. Just fungus all over his toes.
We're starting a rumor now, Jacob Elordi.
Jacob Elordi doesn't need any rumors started about him. No. I think he's doing fine in that department.
Look, we've already jumped... well ahead to the bathtub scene.
We have.
We haven't even given a lot of discussion about the film yet, but...
Do we want a synopsis?
Well, I want to talk about this rumor quickly, the Jacob Elordi thing, if we're sticking to bathtub.
Yeah.
It's not a bathtub rumor, but yeah, hit me.
Yeah, yeah. So did you actually hear what happened to Jacob Elordi?
He assaulted a radio producer?
Yeah. Because?
The radio producer said... let me drink your bathtub or something?
He worked for Kyle and Jackie O and he's holding a tub with like Jacob's bath water written on it.
Yeah.
And
like he's a professional douche.
Yeah. And he
like
approached him. Yes, he's a provocateur. And he approached him on a night out and he's like recording him and goes, hey, Jacob, give me your bath water. And, you know, Jacob allegedly is just like, nah, mate, nah, I'm good. Thanks. Like,
I'm out with my mates. Leave me alone.
Because here's the thing that my biggest issue with this stuff, what response could Jacob give to get him to leave him alone?
Pour his beer in the bath.
I mean, but like, if he doesn't have any, it's like, don't have any on me right now, mate. oh, go get some. It's like, how do I end this fucking conversation?
It's like, literally the producer's like you said, provocateur.
There's no end point. It's like, let's upset him. And then he apparently got physical when he noticed the guy was recording and he scruffed him, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Now, violence is never the answer. I'm a pretty firm pacifist. But if you read out that scenario and ask, what's going to happen next? Most people are going to say violence. I think that's the answer to that, just logically.
For those who don't know Kyle and Jackie O, they're a radio show who thrive on controversy and antagonizing their guests, for example. So the producer, you know, is not going, hey, Jacob, just a fan. Hey, mate, how are you? It's probably like, he's probably pretty antagonistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I do sympathize with old Jacob Alords, and I mean, kind of.
I don't think anyone should get hurt. And if he truly hurt the guy, it's like, well, that sucks. But I'm like, what did that guy think was going to happen? And the best thing that could have happened to him, if he's not truly hurt, is that he got a story of Jacob Elordi put his hands on me.
I think
and
the
now
producer's probably pretty happy as to how
very
this played
happy
out.
That's how that played out.
Yeah.
You know?
So they set him up to fail. And I think it's unfair. I mean, obviously you step into the limelight and you do expect a level of like, well, you know, people are going to be coming for you and you walk into a venue and people are going to know who you are and they're going to want a photo and they're going to want to...
Yeah.
How do you think they picked him out of the crowd is my question. Yeah. How would you notice Jacob Elordi if you were just in a group of people?
Look for someone really
He's eating leaves short? From the top of the tree.
he's just bonking people on the head as he's walking on people as he goes. He's my favourite review. I'm so sorry. But my favourite Letterboxd review of Elvis... I can't remember who wrote
Elvis or Priscilla?
Priscilla, I apologize, where he plays Elvis. Thank you for correcting me. Jacob Elordi plays Elvis Priscilla, and my favorite Letterboxd review I read was, every time I saw Jacob Elordi standing next to a car, I thought to myself, there's no way he's going to fit in that car. Like, it's so true. When you watch that movie, he's enormous.
He's 6'5", and the bathtub in Saltburn was a custom build. To fit him.
Wow. Talk about him and his cum.
To fit his cum.
Which I imagine.
Buckets and buckets.
Like him, long and ropey. So.
Ropey?
Oh, I feel unwell.
Not the description I wanted.
I don't know.
All right, Saltburn.
Yep.
Struggling to find his place at Oxford University, student Oliver Quick finds.
Oxy University.
Come on, you went there, Frank. Yeah. Shouldn't be able to get the pronunciation.
Student Oliver Quick finds himself drawn into the world of a charming and aristocratic Felix Catton, who invites him to Saltburn, his eccentric family's sprawling estate for a summer never to be forgotten.
They are eccentric. They say the darndest things.
Oh, my gosh. We should quickly talk about Rosamund Pike and Richard E. Grant.
He's great. He's a bit Richard E. Grant. For my liking.
I prefer Richard Grant.
He's a bit Richard-y, you know?
I just can't with that. I so badly want to, but you motherfucker.
I think he might be the best
He's great.
Part of it.
No, he's
Richard
excellent.
E. Grant. Yeah. I think I kind of agree, and I've always felt like he's the slept-on point because Rosamund Pike gets all the flowers. And I
but
think
she gets the zingers. Though.
She gets more to do and also some pretty aloof lines.
I think she's okay. I don't think a lot of what she says is that funny. Like, I was in a crowd that I was the minor. Like, people found her hysterically funny when I went and saw
this. Well, they're probably more educated than you in real life.
I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I couldn't understand her posh accent.
I didn't get it.
I just didn't.
Who are you?
That's Barry Keoghan. I don't get it.
Also, sorry, Barry Keoghan is meant to be British or English in this, right?
He's doing a very weird accent.
It's bad. He sounds Irish the whole time.
He's meant to be doing something. It's not like Liverpool, but like...
Liverpudlian.
Sure. Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is.
He went out with someone to drink and find out how Liverpudlian spoke.
And he got too drunk and fucking with that. Forgot.
He forgot. He sounds Irish the entire time.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem.
A line he says to Rosamund Pike where he's like... Having a mother like you.
He's so fucking beautiful.
Because you're so fucking beautiful. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this? And I thought maybe it was a plot point. I'm like, is he
By
slipping?
By order of the Peaky Blinders.
Is it part of his whirlwind
Is it
lies?
Part of his character, right? Is that what he's doing? But yeah, I should bring up really quickly.
You should.
For anyone who listened to our last episode last year, Jurassic Park 3, we called our shot and said what our next three movies were going to be. And then...
We didn't
do them. We just decided not to. And part of the reason we're doing this one, even so long after it was released, you know, it came out last year in like October or November or whatever, it's been on Amazon for a long time, is because this movie has had a lot of legs. By the time you're listening to this, faithful listener, it probably won't quite still be at that fever pitch it was at, but this movie was the movie people talked about. People who I know, who know I watch a lot of movies and some people who listen to this, would come up to me and just be like, oh, you've watched Saltburn, right? Or would text me. It was the only movie that I had like so many people calling me and asking me about.
Yeah.
And for the most part, they loved it. It's a very popular film.
I think generally
film.
Speaking, people really enjoy it. So you guys are the minority.
I think that's
that
true
didn't like it.
On some level.
Okay. It's generally speaking, it's like it's 70% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. It's like sevens across the board.
People on Letterboxd are falling over themselves loving it. It's got
people
some...
are putting things in my Letterboxd to say, watch Saltburn.
People...
pamphlets.
Yeah.
Saltburn pamphlets.
They're coming around the house. All right.
I just love the idea that you think that's what Letterboxd... So I'm like... Oh, Frank, did you see a letterbox? And you run out to check your mail like, Tom, there's nothing in there, I'm telling
still
you.
Still empty.
This snail mail, it's
you
slow.
Ask me every week.
All right, let's talk about Barry Keoghan.
I think he's very bad in this movie.
I'd say weak link.
Yeah, I think he's maybe the worst part. He's the worst performance in it, definitely.
I just don't like him generally.
I like...
Maybe it's his little face.
I like him as an actor.
Why?
I think he's very unique. He's very interesting. I think he's a young Hoffman. I think he's got a long way to go. Hold on.
Yep. Let me finish.
I think he's got a great career ahead of him if he's utilized the right way. I think that people are trialing with him as to like, how can we best use this
Where
guy?
Where does this guy fit?
Yeah. I just realized you mean Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
Who?
Okay. Because
you mean Felicity Huffman?
Yeah. I thought you said Huffman. Ariana Huffington. No, I like Philip Seymour Hoffman. I don't really see that comparison.
Sorry.
And so I'm sitting here thinking,
You're
who would I compare him to? And then I went, oh, Dustin Hoffman. Oh, the one that Marcus just said.
Great Hoffmans.
Yeah, I think he does actually kind of have that weird, like, almost anti-charisma quality to him that Dustin Hoffman came along and was like, this weaselly little fuck. And then it's like, oh, he's incredible.
But that's what I like about him. What I've had so much resentment towards the industry for such a long time, the last 10 years or so, because it's all about the look now before the talent. Whereas back in the day, it was all the De Niro's, the Pacino's. I've had this conversation before 100 times over. And I feel like it's just starting to turn again where you're starting to get these actors coming through that aren't the best looking people, the most like
interesting
Hollywood
looking,
or glamorized, but
something about
there's
them.
Something about them. And so, yes, I don't disagree that he was definitely one of the weaker points of this film. I think you're meant to not obviously like him, but he's got such a presence as well. So if he's the guy that you're in on the script is like he's standing on one side of the bar, creepily staring at all the popular kids, I'm going to buy that.
Oh, of course. I think he suits this role. I just think he's...
There's something going on behind the eyes that I'm like, what is he thinking?
Yeah.
And all the way through
that's good because he's thinking a lot.
He's playing the quiet kid meme, right, you know, which is like, you know, as the younger generation will know, like the idea of like, oh, don't upset the quiet kid at school because who knows what he's going to do, right? I think that's a really interesting point that you make, that there's a swing back towards more talent and sort of an unusual aura in people just lately, and it is right as the decline of Marvelization as well.
Yes.
So it's like now that we're not so interested in superheroes and that sort of thing, maybe it's swinging that way.
Is that the word now, Marvelization? Because I love that.
Just
I marvel at that.
Ruined it in
3 seconds. Also, sorry, but isn't it interesting that you've got Barry Keoghan right next to Jacob Elordi, who a lot of people argue is I'm really good looking and that's
he's the Hollywood... Gen Z-er, like he's leading the forefront of
he's, but also
a very stereotypical.
I read an article that was like, is he too tall to be famous? And I was like,
but,
no.
Yeah, I mean, you could. But one day I would have argued that. Now, if you look at like Elizabeth Debicki, who's climbing through, and she's 7 foot something, like she's a freak.
Yeah,
she's obviously not. But do you know what I mean? No. Like, but she's very obviously a lot taller than anyone else on the cast.
A lot taller than Princess Diana. Really
and I
was.
Think people are starting to go, yeah. I mean, I see that, but who cares?
Yeah, like, we can shoot super around talented. Like. Again, it's like for many years you mentioned Hoffman and Pacino. They're all short.
They're Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, man. Hey.
Buy me a
Robert Downey Jr.
Absolutely. I think the point that you've made as well, Frank, off of Marcus's point, you guys are talking about this movie in a way that is more interesting than watching the movie because the idea that this movie is actually setting up in a meta way Barry versus Jacob, look at the typical, like getting completely away from whatever this movie thinks it's trying to say about like class and the idea of like romance and
Really what it's trying to say? Of course it is, because it's on the nose. Yeah,
we'll get into that in a second. We'll get into that. But if it's the idea if it's doing some commentary on movie stardom and actors, that is kind of interesting. That it's like, look at this quiet but weirdly intriguing and alluring kid who doesn't have a natural sort of traditional beauty standard to him, and then look at Jacob Elordi. And of course, the one is obsessed with the other, and the other, Jacob Elordi, is intrigued by but finds Barry disposable. That's a really cool idea. Hmm. I wish the movie didn't fucking suck. Like, then I'd be more interested in it. But I think Barry's performance...
It's a great time, because actually the movie doesn't suck. So you should watch it again.
This movie sucks come out of a fucking bath. It's really...
But at least it's doing something. You know what I mean? Like, I watched it and I was like, I know this is coming out. I know it's going to make... Like, everyone's like, oh, it made me like uncomfortable, but I'm not sure how I felt about it. It is like, it's definitely trying... A little hard to be provocative, I think. It's like, oh my God, can you believe we're putting this on screen?
And I think trying to be meaningful in a way that I don't mind.
I don't think it, what do you mean?
I think she is, because when Emerald Fennell is doing two things at the moment, and by the way, I really liked Promising Young Woman. I know you did, Frank. Marcus, you didn't much care for it. Mm. This movie didn't change my view of Promising Young Woman except to actually make me appreciate it for being a sharper piece and having much more cohesive vision to it and sort of thematics. But she does interviews where she'll say, I don't like people making me the story of my movies. I think that's really annoying and I think it's kind of sexist. And I see where she's coming from. I get the idea that, you know, she's the young up and starter and she's a woman in Hollywood, you know, whether it's her or it's Greta or it's, you know, Olivia Wilde. The behind the scenes stuff or the actual filmmaker themselves.
Their life and who they are is so much more important, the air quotes.
Gets foregrounded.
Yeah, that's, the media take shit.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that can be bad. Hmm. But I also think that when she's asked, she's also got no shortage of, well, here's what the movie's about. And she'll say like, oh, I want to leave some things ambiguous, but okay, let me tell you what I think it's about. And the way she talks about it is, again, more interesting than what she's made, I think. It's like, yeah, there's some interesting things that you're throwing out there about like, the weird allure that exists between idolizing someone but hating what they represent in the form of Felix, and the idea that Oliver is kind of this unknowable, enigmatic force more than an actual character, and he's something we could all recognize in ourselves. And I'm like, okay, some of that's interesting, but then I watch the movie and I think she's done a starkly shit job of talking about anything of substance in it.
Really?
Apart from Cummy Bumpwater. That's substantial. I kind of stuttered over substantial. <It's>
really nailed the landing there.
Got to suck that out of my
she,
teeth.
You go, Max. Fennell is like, she's like the Hindenburg, right? Oh, you ready for this
Continue.
One?
Go on.
You like this one?
We'll see. TBD.
Great takeoff.
What happened in the... I can never remember.
Just a fiery mess in the middle and just can't stick the landing. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
The humanity, yeah.
Yeah, all the humanity. Yeah. No, I wanted this film to work, especially off the back of Promising Young Woman, which my biggest issue with that was that the wrap-up at the end was just so whirlwind and quick and immediate and rushed and a bit like as if, you know. Whereas this one... actually made more sense to me, but I, as a viewer, I caught onto it far earlier with his intention at least. Mm-hmm. Of course, I didn't know that he was going to be some sort of vampiric serial killer. Yeah. You know what I mean? With a motive.
Kills them all to get his own.
Yeah, or some justification. Like, but I knew that there was something wrong with him, and I knew that he had an agenda, and I knew that he was playing them. From the first moment that his personality switched, right? And I was like, okay, well, he's in control. I just want to see where he takes it.
Do you remember that moment when you went, okay.
Oh, God,
because
there's gonna ask that?
Obviously a pointed moment is the one we've already referenced with Rosamund Pike, where he's been so quiet and he's been such a wallflower and suddenly goes, with a mother so fucking gorgeous, or whatever he says
to
her.
It's,
and she kind of for a moment doesn't know how to react and smiles. There are little moments in this movie that I'm like, I kind of like that moment. I like her reaction to what he says and how you're not sure what she's going to do for a second. And then
she takes
smiles.
A while to process,
It's a jarring moment when he kicks into gear. All of a sudden you're like, oh, shit. And that is interesting.
So I thought it was, I enjoyed every twist, you know, flip back and forth, I guess.
But what this film does, again, is it just rushes. It just all of a sudden it does some weird, like, Scooby-Doo, like, wrap-up, or, like, rip the mask off. Oh, my God, it's Mr. Jenkins, the janitor.
Yeah.
And then it just spoon-feeds you everything. And
I can agree with that. I feel like it's a whirlwind of an ending, and you go,
I kind of go, oh, that wasn't what I wanted. That wasn't the payoff.
What did you expect? What did you think?
To me, this film, again, like Promising Young Woman was, it was trying to be two different films. And I don't know how she does it. It must be intentional, but she's done it twice now, where she seems to direct and write something that has this split vision and she can't quite merge them and she can't get the vision to connect. And so it's kind of like we get the film that we see on screen, the film she's presented us, yet it alludes to a completely different film. And I feel like that film, that's probably the better film that we never get to see. Like there's a version of this that's like it's so close to being really great and it just doesn't hit the mark. Do you know what I mean by that?
I absolutely agree with that because the movie Talented Mr. Ripley exists. So obviously there are versions of this story that are good. And people reference Brideshead Revisited. I don't know that very well.
Oh, like, I have heard of it. It's never seen the
Evelyn Waugh book from the 40s. There's a TV show with Jeremy Irons in it and it's very – like our parents all would have watched it. It was kind of like the BBC's – you know, they did that Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth years ago. Mm. It was like before that, that was the show that everyone had seen. Mm. And it's a similar story about a very wealthy family and a man who comes along and he has an affair with – first the son and then the daughter and, you know, all about the class disparity and the differences in the ways they live their life. These stories work. I think they can be very interesting. I think it's a good point what you make, that there is something beneath that is more interesting, but it's not a sense that I get from this movie where it's like there's a subtext that enriches it. It's like there is something untapped in this film that doesn't come out to me and never really emerges. Mostly because if I'm going to give my biggest criticism, I found it pretty boring. It's a long movie. Any movie's long when it starts to become a bit like sort of a slog and like a languid pace like this one does. And it's shot by Linus Sandgren, who, you know, won an Oscar for La La Land and is Damien Chazelle's guy and done some other stuff and did Babylon, which is my favorite movie of 2022. I can't remember so much of what this movie looks like because there was nothing substantial to tie it to. There were very few moments that I felt sort of elevated by it where I went, sometimes I went, that looks quite pretty. Yeah. And then truly 10 minutes went by and I was like, I can't remember what that shot was.
The shot where Jacob Elordi's in the middle of the hedge maze and he's got the wings and the minotaur.
It's very Romeo and Juliet, like Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. And you've got Barry walking to, what's his name, Oscar?
Oliver
walking through the party at the mansion and he's got the stag antlers on his head.
Yeah.
And you see the use of shadows with that and like it's cool.
I think from where to go it's visually pretty striking. And I felt like I walked away feeling like, oh, I've just seen a piece of art. Like it does look pretty stunning. And I think my flip to that is my favorite scene. I remember thinking, wow, that looks incredible, is when Felix has just died and they're then having lunch in the dining room. Mm. And then they have the butler close the curtains and the curtains are red. So then the whole scene is just drenched in this red light. Mm. And I was thinking how striking that is and how ridiculous every performance was in that scene. You've got Rosamund Pike bawling, like just sobbing to herself. Mm.
Kid Archie something who plays the Farley, the cousin from
Archie
America.
Archie Madduke, yeah.
Yeah, who actually, I take it back, is the worst performance in this movie. I hate his performance.
I agree. I don't think he's
They're like,
I
can we get the most Gen Z kid we can find?
He fucking
and
hated that.
And make him detestable.
But you're saying this scene.
And then is it Annabelle's the sister and she's sitting there and she just pours the wine and she never stops.
Yeah.
And then obviously Richard E. Grant, like every character is doing something entirely different. None of them are in line. And I was sitting there thinking how it sort of harkened back to theater days. It felt like a ridiculously dark comedy on stage. If you saw that and then someone was dragging a body across, you know, the front of stage or something like that, that's what it felt like. It felt like a really delicious, absurdist dark comedy.
Can I just say too, something that really was my ick for this film was the – it was hard not to, of course, with this, again, this sort of elite world, but like it felt like that friend, again, his name has escaped me, felt like almost like a token hire. He was the only –
You mean the American cousin? Yeah. So, well, he's the American
cousin. Farley, thank you.
And he's black and they have one scene where they're like, is this because I'm black?
Yeah.
And I was like – oh, don't try and tackle this topic.
Yeah.
And then the conversation goes for another 10 seconds and they don't. I'm like, don't have that scene. You have no idea what to do with that topic. That was the most embarrassing attempt to bring up any sort of, like,
misguided.
You're not going to make a statement on it.
No.
In that time.
It was bizarre.
In this film.
But this is why we have this pod, because that scene you're talking about, Frank, that you described so beautifully and sensually, I hated that scene. It was fucking terrible. But
it comes back to
scene at the end, Tom.
No, the
scene
lunch.
With the where they draw the curtain and went. The second the red saturation happened, I like fell back in my chair, rolling my eyes. I was like, oh,
I had that instinct. I had that instinct, and I went, I'm into it. I don't know, like I knew it. I was like,
it locked you in. It's good.
I've got a hot take on this film.
Go on.
I wrote this down actually this afternoon because I thought about it. Actually use my brain for something.
Go on.
I think there's an aspect here where you could justify it if you're going to be one of those people to say that this is a it's like an ambiguous representation of the seven deadly sins. And if you were to unpack it and look at it as like wrath, envy, gluttony, sloth, what else we got? Pride. It's all there as well. And whether it's like just a writing technique and you've sort of just included that for the sake of storytelling, for a narrative. But I think it's very easy to justify this sort of like a transitional journey through those seven sins throughout this film as well.
Yeah. If Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman showed up investigating the murder halfway through the night, I think I would like it more. What's in the box? He keeps yelling at Morgan Freeman. I'm sorry about him. He's still confused about the box.
That's me looking for something symbolic in this other than what I feel was a very, again, on-the-nose sort of statement about, you know, the elite and
What's wrong with on-the-nose?
I agree. I actually fully agree. I think that something that is,
and I know we've spoke because we spoke about.
Wait, who do you agree with?
I agree with both of you.
I don't want to
fight, guys. Sorry, Frank.
When we did Barbie, obviously that's on the nose, and we all had a great time.
Babylon is the most on the. It's just like movies are great, just punching you in the dick over and over, and I'm like, they are great.
I agree with you, Giselle.
Yes.
So if this doesn't land for you, just because it's on the nose, that's not the problem, is it?
I think if it's on the nose and it does so artlessly and it does so in a way with whatever it has to say, even if it wants to be so like abject or so like insistent about it, I want to find that thing interesting, no matter if it is just a straight down the line, like deeply cut but narrow idea. Because Promising Young Woman, I don't want to like say there's no complexity to that movie. And there are people who hate that movie because they think it's saying things that I personally don't think it's saying. But I do think it's pretty cut and dry that it's like, this is a movie about female agency and how it's impossible to be respected by a woman in this day and age.
Yeah.
And respected by a woman?
Respected by a woman, sorry. Respected as a woman in this day and age.
Yeah.
And that the, you know, ability for men to engage in certain deplorable behavior and get away with it is very easy. Yeah. And wouldn't it be fun if that was subverted? And that's like, I even went too far explaining that there. It's just like, girl goes bad, gets bad guys. That's that
but
movie.
Also, but
and
it
I
isn't,
like
but
it.
But at the end of it, it isn't subverted because they do get away with it. They don't.
No.
I just changed my mind entirely.
Because of the
I forgot what happened.
The rushed wrap-up and the very convenient timing of
the text messages.
The ending of that movie is always going to be a thorn for some. No, but it's going to be a thorn for some people. And I can't say it's my favorite part of Promising Young Woman, but I really do like that movie. This movie, here's the thing. A sledgehammer is much more interesting as well if you're precise with it and you're hitting it in the same spot. I don't know what she's saying with this movie.
Yeah,
and
she's
playing
whack-a-mole with this sledgehammer.
100%. And she hit my fucking car. Like, what are you doing, Emerald? Like, I don't understand what she's trying to say. And I don't think it's in an interesting, ambiguous way. I think it's in a, you don't know what you're saying with this movie. This is a mess.
But it's the landing. It's the ending that fails. Like, if she could just nail the ending of her films, firstly, not rush them, and secondly, like, actually know what her message is and drive it home, I think we're good.
That's my question. Why does there have to be a message? Can we not enjoy the journey? Can we not enjoy...
But all of a sudden it's about, the whole thing was about his desire and to see if he could take that control and abuse that control. What's the end game for him? I mean, to dance naked through this fucking manor at the end
Saltburn is now his... Empire.
Here's the thing.
Here we go.
I love that last 2 minutes. I was so ready to walk out of this movie the second it was done And the moment Sophie Ellis-Bextor's Murder on the Dance Floor started and he's just windmilling everywhere, I was like, yeah. I mean, this is kind of great. Some, like, yeah, I can't hate this. 8-inch
bloody whopper flopping around to that's Murder on the Dance Floor. And
yes, every revolution he made added half a star to my review of this. I was like, yeah, look,
I'm cackling
at this bit. I kind of love that. Obviously, the hour or so preceding it, I think, is dreadful, but...
I hated that last scene so much. Like, that was my
him
role.
Him dancing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved
that was
it.
My, Did I, you really? I went back on the couch and rolled my eyes and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Really?
This is... Do you remember... Wait, this Again, is niche. So then, no, for, no, I've got a niche okay, reference. Sorry. Do you remember in Hot Fuzz when they do Romeo and Juliet? Do you remember this? And at the very end they do curtain call and it's love me, say that you love me. That was it for me.
Yeah, but that's amazing and so was this.
I feel like they're going for the same thing.
But I think this is a very lighthearted film. Okay, maybe not lighthearted. Tom just winced. Just
like, no, okay. Well, Drew. Let's say we agree with your point.
But I just think...
What do you think about the three very controversial scenes they've placed into this film, and were they necessary? What do they represent? Why were they there?
Just putting a quick pin in it. I want to know what your three are, but go on, Frank.
Well, we've got the bathtub, drinking the bathtub post-wank, which I think represents obsession, but it's also just like absurdist. It's just like who is this obsessed that they would do this, right?
Sure.
Same with the grave...
So you're telling me if you walked in and Brandon Urie had just gotten out of the bath.
It was Brandon Urie.
I think
Brandon.
Marcus,
like,
after you.
Like Chad.
Like Chandon. You know, Chandon.
Chandon. I think, Marcus, right after you finished watching this movie a few months back.
Oh, Brandon Flowers.
Brandon Flowers.
Also, thank you. Yes. That's what I did.
Right after you finished watching this movie a few months back, you called me and you were like, so which of us is the guy in the bath and which of us is drinking? And I was like, all I know is one of those two is you and Frank and I'm the cum in the bathwater. Like, that's the actual. Okay. So what have
that,
you...
That cannot have been... Conversation never happened. This never happened. Tom is fabricating this
whole
thing.
And you said at the end,
thing.
You're like, I will deny this phone call when you bring it up on mic. Go on, Frank. You were talking about the three
controversial
scenes.
Number two is the grave scene.
Yeah.
Number three controversial scene?
It's why I said he's a vampiric serial killer.
The fingering when she's on her period.
Yeah. Fine. Like, I'm sure it's been covered in a film before.
It's like a fucking Wednesday for me. Like, none of this shit is that provocative. Like, licking period blood. Like, that was another moment where I was like, this is like a fucking 13-year-old's idea of something that's shocking.
Which is weird because that's, I mean, relatively tame. Yeah. Having sex with a grave is...
It's something.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah.
It's probably this,
it felt more like a platform for these actors to just launch their careers.
And also, can I go back to that? Sorry. The most obnoxiously enjoyable, delicious trivia that I read about this was so Rosamund Pike plays Jacob Elordi's mum, right? And Jacob Elordi dies.
Elspeth.
And they have a scene. Well, they don't even have a scene. We hear Rosamund scream when she discovers his body.
Mm.
They didn't film it, but Jacob Elordi got in full dead makeup so Rosamund could play the scene out, experience the feeling, and then record the scream. I was like, you are such a theatre kid in your second year of uni doing your, like, director's piece.
How else is going to be real? I can't access the emotion.
Goosebumps, and for the wrong reasons.
But I read that and I was like, this is the movie they made. This is the movie they made. They're all sitting there thinking, we are so artistic. Like Jacob Elordi. No, sorry, what's his name?
They're Bradley Coopering, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, Barry doing the clothes scene. I've got an idea for this grave scene. Close the set. I want to do that. They're all just... in theatre school.
But do you think Jacob Elordi just got one of those, like, novelty things where you can put on your head and it looks like an arrow's through your head and he just, like, lay there with his tongue out? And she's like, no! My son! Like, that's fun.
But he did the, oh.
I don't know.
But don't you think that's so, again?
That's very telling, yes, because this movie is deeply, deeply obnoxious about the idea that it has something either emotional or social to impart on people, and that people need to go to some length to do it, whether it's to fuck a grave or to get in full dead body makeup.
You
so
do
that
have
your
to go
fake mum
to some lengths to fuck a grave.
Yeah,
so let's just.
You got to hop a fence.
I want to say as well.
Bring your shovel.
I assume. Yeah.
Carey Mulligan's.
Allegedly.
Carey Mulligan's cameo, let's call it. Yes. Yeah.
Quite funny.
Kind of pissed me off.
What?
Interesting.
Because I think she's very talented. I think she's extremely talented.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that in later episodes, I'm
sure. I agree.
But. And again, with Promising Young Woman, I think she was great. That was never my criticism. I think the performances were great. Same as this film. I think generally the performances were pretty great. And yeah, it's very obnoxious and it's very theatre and it's very like I'm acting.
Yeah.
But it works. Doesn't mean the film works. But Carey Mulligan's cameo in this was like the writer being like, have you seen my other film? That's how it felt. And
okay,
I'm like,
so don't De Niro and Scorsese can't work together 12 times.
No, but I
get Marcus's point that if De Niro has like a cameo as like a popcorn, like get your popcorn here in one of Scorsese's
movies. That's kind
movies,
of it. It was like
I get that.
It felt it was such a squandering of her talent. For such a non-role.
She's fine to do it. She's probably happy to be there.
She was a punchline.
So what?
It didn't work for me. Don't include her. If you're not going to use her talents,
you did use
don't include her because you're like, I'm creating my own multiverse. This is my she's my Johnny Depp, guys.
Okay, so but again, Tim Burton, Johnny Depp, everyone does this. Everyone has partnerships they like to work together.
Yeah, but do it well. You are free to do it, but do it well.
I did. Thank you. I'm Emerald Fennel right now, and I'm Carey Mulligan, and I did it well.
They were great.
That was hilarious.
I take Marcus's point.
With a grain of salt.
I latched onto anything that I could like enjoy in this film, and I found her funny. So I was just like, yeah, a bit distracting, but she made me laugh. One of the bits I laughed the most about in the whole film, the simplest bit, is Rosamund Pike just going, oh, look, I've got goosebumps, look. And Carey Mulligan goes, oh, no. Like, that made me piss myself. I was like, oh, thank fuck, like a funny
moment.
There's
no small actors, only small parts. I get that too. Like she did well with
She's
what she was given.
Just
but
with that
like,
tidbit.
I don't understand why you're mad about it. I don't understand what the problem is.
Because I didn't like this film.
Okay, great. Good answer. So when she dies off screen and Rosamund Pike was like, oh, she died, silly girl.
She'll do anything for attention.
I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah. Rosamund Pike didn't land for me as much as it seems to have for everyone else. I liked this extended bit where she talks about how she thinks common people is written about her. That was pretty funny.
Very good.
But she's like, no.
She says a line about what's her name, killed herself. She's like, oh, that's just her or something. Like
Tom just said, she'll do anything for attention.
That's it. Yeah.
And that's a good line.
It's a great line.
There's some funny.
Thanks, Emerald Fennel, for that great line in this good film.
Shout out randomly to Paul Rees, who plays the butler.
Oh yes,
and he is just a
is awful to look at.
He's a very
apologies, Paul.
No, he's a very. You're right. He's kind of
intense.
Got like a bit of an
he's ugly
lurch
than Larry
look
Kurgan.
To him, like a very upper class lurch. Mm. But he's a theatre actor and he's done like some other TV and stuff. But he's in this, and he's also in Napoleon briefly. That I saw this year, and
he plays Napoleon, right?
He played Napoleon.
He plays the syphilis.
He's just sitting in a corner with syphilis written on him. He's like, and remember, I'm here. This explains the craziness.
I'll CGI me later.
No, but he's in that, and he's in this, and it was just weird watching those two movies fairly close together. And I was like, this guy's kind of great. He's got a great face. I really like. He doesn't do a lot in Saltburn, but every scene with him in it, I'm like. God, what a figure, what a presence. He is like quietly one of my favourite parts of the movie. I really liked him.
I expected more from him, I'm assuming.
I wish there was more, and it's the same
because
Napoleon.
Because he's observing everything.
Yeah.
You're like, why is this guy watching everything? And, you know, he sees...
That was a red herring, I think. He was just there.
Yeah.
You know?
He plays...
He plays a pivotal moment when Oliver does his first, what I thought was his first power play. With the family, which was the egg scene. You know when he orders eggs?
Yes.
And they come out and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't eat those.
Right.
Because they're not, you know, whatever.
They're runny. Funny.
Yes.
And I think that was a very conscious choice for him to test the waters and see what he could get away with.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and obviously they're like, what the fuck? Okay, get the eggs the way you want. So he takes them back and it's like, okay, I can play this.
But didn't you think that scene was funny previous to that where it's like, well, it's breakfast, darling. Everything's on the table.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like eggs. Well, but well, not the eggs. Everything but the eggs.
Yeah,
you order the eggs; they make them fresh. But everything else is on the table over here.
Yeah,
you guys have got a leg up on me here because it's very fun to be coming back doing this after such a long break because it reminds me of Elvis, our very first episode, where I hadn't actually seen that in 3 or 4 months when we did the episode because I'd seen it in cinemas, and I haven't had the chance in the last week to watch this again. So I'm going going off what I remember from, but like November was when I watched this.
I watched it in my lunch breaks this week.
Yes. And you really enjoyed
it. Right down the middle, guys.
Had a great time.
No, I can't remember a lot of it. A lot of it has like whisked away from me, but I suppose some of the stuff we should just talk about briefly is like Oliver's a liar, right? Like that's his whole thing. He's been lying since the beginning about who he is and he's been trying to ingratiate himself. If there's some like aspect of commentary to this,
Is that it?
I mean, it seems to have worked for him, right? It seems that Fennell is saying
don't lie or murder. Wait, actually, do lie and do murder.
Let's get rid of that.
Felix is also far too nice for his own good.
Like, here's the thing. Felix is not. It. I think this movie thinks Felix is worse than he is. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, but Felix isn't a bad guy.
No, not at all.
I think this movie
is a bit aloof.
He's like a Princess Diana in this scene. Do you know what I mean? Like in this film. Sorry,
that's interesting.
He's surrounded by this high snob.
Not so
society.
Much about what's around. Just in terms of like a bit airy. There's an air about him where, but he's also like Mr. Nice. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like.
But he has
plays
a darkness.
That sort of there's something
none of
there.
That makes
there's
sense.
There's a lot.
Princess Di.
Well, she's amassed an adoration, and like the outer sheen is just like she's the people's princess. Everyone loves her. Everyone idolizes her. But there was the unseen, which is now much discussed.
Right. I think Tom's justified my point.
Degree.
Very different. Felix and Princess Di have. I would say Princess Di has an inner darkness and a depression, whereas Felix is just a bit.
You can't deny there's something under the surface. It can't all just be there.
Of who?
Of Felix. Like there's more to it. But
of course
like,
there is.
Yeah.
I guess
there's a reason why he keeps like going back. Like, you know, there's a line where the sister's like, oh, you know, you're better than last year's. So Felix is obviously doing this as a repetition thing.
Yeah.
Well, so there's something there. There's a darkness, as Tom said.
I don't think it's a darkness. I think he thinks people are replaceable and he is attracted to
the broken. Oh, that's an endearing quality, of course. So not dark at all.
He's not doing this as a game. He's not doing this for sport.
Are you sure?
He just gets bored of people. Yeah, I don't.
But that's a game, Frank, and you do it to us.
Jesus.
Wow. Okay, so this is where you're
coming
out. Yeah,
no, but I don't think he's intentional. Like, I think he thinks I think he has the best intentions. He brings these people to Saltburn. He thinks it's going to be a great summer. And then something annoys him. And
like
he goes,
feeding the homeless to him.
Yeah, kinda.
Okay.
And then he gets bored of the homeless person. It's like, oh, you're gross.
It's charity, right? And that's the thing we were talking about with Oliver. If there's something Fennell saying here, it's the idea that there is like a fetishization going on with the way that Felix gloms on to Oliver and goes like, oh, this poor, you know, poor guy who, you know, lent me his bicycle and his mum was a drug addict and all these terrible things and, you know, come with me to Saltburn. And whether I think there's a darkness to Felix, I do just think there's a side to him that's very predictable, sort of boringly human, which is just, like he gets bored of things.
But also very confusing sexual tension between the two.
Yeah.
Which I don't think was ever really explained because I was like, is Felix into this? Is he... like whatever goes.
I don't think so. I don't think Felix picks up on it at all. I think he's oblivious.
No, that's it. So he's really that oblivious to the sexual advances?
The funniest thing
I don't know if that's a Felix or a Jacob Elordi thing.
Here's the thing. The funniest thing I read about this movie was Emerald Fennell talking about casting Felix and she's like, everyone came in and they had this idea of who he was, this really like complex person and they did a good job but they were putting on all these different airs and, you know, playing these levels.
Oh God, she speaks like that, right?
I don't know. And Jacob Elordi, he's English. And Jacob Elordi comes in and he just plays him like as this real airhead fuckboy who's really bad at sex. And I thought, yeah, that's great. And I'm like, what if that's just Jacob? Like Jacob walks in and she's like, him. Like that's,
he turns around
that's
and goes,
the one.
Huh?
It's You on me? It's not so also, different hold on, to hold on. The
sorry,
go on,
sorry.
Go on.
Emerald Fennell goes, yeah, he's really bad at sex. That's how he auditioned.
She fully said, take on Jacob Elordi or her take on Felix is he doesn't need to be good at sex or kissing or anything because he's just so hot that people
are
just.
Okay, good read. Thank you, Jacob. Now have sex. We'll watch.
We've got a grave here if you Barry did it earlier. So
you lay in the dirt and Barry will come in. Lay still.
It's weird what Jacob has become. Frank and I have talked about this recently because I watched the SNL episode that Jacob Elordi hosted a few weeks back. Mm. And Jacob Elordi...
The whole thing is, oh, Lordy.
Every
fan
oh,
themselves.
Lordy, baby girl. But, like, it is... He's in six sketches that night, and I swear four out of six of them are... Guy walks into a situation and everyone goes, can you believe how good looking this man is? And that's the sketch.
That's kind of annoying.
It was kind of funny the first time or the second time, but then I was like, doesn't he go, guys, give me something else? Or does he go, oh, yeah, I am good looking. Like, is that just his reaction? He's just you guys nailed it. That's me. Like,
I think he's going to have a great career. I think that he's going to be tested.
I don't think he's untalented. I think he's pretty good.
He could be on the verge of being the next Sam Worthington is...
Ooh, bad.
No. As in, like, being... Hold on.
Has two jobs in his life and
being
then
built
gets...
up to be the next thing and just it just not working.
I think he's more talented than Sam Worthington.
I have a different comparison.
Yeah?
And I think he's more Hugh Grant.
Maybe. I do think he's a better actor than Sam Worthington.
Yeah. Who isn't?
I do agree that Sam Worthington had a similar, if not the same thing, where it was like, oh, he's in the biggest movie ever made, so what's this guy's star profile?
Yep.
But I don't think there was ever that sexualized. Like, I don't think anyone ever was like, oh, my God, Sam Worthington.
No. I'm not. That's not what I'm comparing.
So except for Tom.
Except for me, obviously. You guys have seen my locker. But I think Jacob Elordi, the comparison I've heard that I agreed with, is kind of Jude Law. That period in the early mid-2000s where it was like, put him in everything. He's everyone's favorite. Yeah. He's everyone's crush. He needs to be in every movie right now. And within a couple of years, they kind of did it with Colin Farrell a little bit as well.
Yeah.
And within a couple of years, we're all just going to go, fucking man, I'm sick of this guy. Like already it's kind of
But hopefully they get a renaissance like Colin Farrell.
I mean, here's and Jude Law.
And Jude Man.
So when I say he's going to be tested, he's been put in to replace Andrew Garfield in the new Frankenstein film opposite Defoe and a whole... A-list star-studded cast.
Who's making that? Do you remember?
I can't remember. I'm sorry. So we'll have to check that. But
it's interesting.
It's a big film. And like, if you're getting put in opposite Defoe in something, you've got to be up at your top of your game, right?
Like, it is.
I think he'll just do the same thing again.
I think he's a much better Elvis than Austin Butler, I'll say. He was wonderful in
Guillermo del Toro is in the new Frankenstein.
Cool. Very cool.
Okay.
But yeah, especially if he's replacing Garfield, he's got big shoes to fill. Yeah. I reckon they. I feel like this is
size
rushing
11.
Him.
Would you say? Frank?
He's 6'5". They're size 14.
They're trying to rush his career with this one. It's like
management have gone. He's hot right now. You want him? Did they kick Garfield off?
No, I think it was a conflict from what I've read.
The spot opened up, and they were like, "Elordi's hot right now." Boom.
Yep. Not a bad comparison to Garfield either. In the like late 2000s, early 2010s, where it was like, "This guy's it. This is the one. He's going to be Spider-Man. We're going to put him in everything. He's going to be the new guy." And then kind of, and I think he's had an actually pretty good career.
The best thing
that
happened to Garfield was that Spider-Man didn't work at the time.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
It did.
My favorite Spider-Man.
Yeah, which one? What's the name of it? Go on.
Spider-Man 2, Jamie Foxx.
I thought he was a great Spider-Man, but like critically.
He wasn't a good Peter Parker.
It failed. And so I think then went, okay, and I don't quote me on this, but wasn't Hacksaw Ridge very closely followed?
It was 2016, so I can't remember when his last Spider-Man movie was. It must have been maybe around 2014, so it wasn't soon. But it was very much, the first one came out and everyone was like, that was okay, I guess. And the second one came out, they were like, no, we said it was okay. You misheard us. Like, we didn't ask for a second one. Yeah, yeah. What year was it, the last one?
Yeah, 2014 was the next one. And then 2016 was Hacksaw Ridge.
And Hacksaw Ridge, by the way, is a movie that very quickly became like, I don't know, you probably want to get away from this sort of stuff, man. Like, you know, I don't know if you've read about Mel Gibson.
Well,
but
and then Andrew Garfield went, I am the most serious actor ever. He takes himself... and the craft very seriously.
He was anointed by Philip Seymour Hoffman right before he died. He's one of those guys that Hoffman kind of met and was like, you know, I don't spend a lot of time with a lot of young actors. I'm kind of keep to myself. I would be happy to sort of mentor you. I think you've got it. Like, I think they were in a stage show together.
Man, how good is that?
That's crazy. That's a crazy thing to have.
Goosebumps.
And yeah, it would
feel incredible. But we digress. My point is that Elordi has a path ahead of him that I'm not sure where he's going to go. Mm-hmm. I think that Saltburn was an easy role for him. I don't think that it was overly challenging.
Do you know who he reminds me of is Harry Styles.
But he can act.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean by that. Harry Styles, you mean when in that movie where he didn't know where the camera was?
Okay.
Someone licking Jacob Elordi's sweaty arms and like his sweaty shirt would actually probably be both sexier and a little nastier than slurping cum out of a drain, I would say. There'd be something there. I'd enjoy that.
Why would you even think of that?
Another hot take. I think that the nerdy friend that Oliver makes when he first get to, is it Oxford?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's not actually Oxford.
I don't know.
That's
about
what
that.
I said. I read it at the start. It's Oxford.
I believe they did actually film at Oxford. Yes.
Yeah. Heard of it? I can't remember his name, but he.
It's Jeff. Is it Jeff?
Jeff. It definitely might
be,
not
could,
a Jeff.
It could be Jeff.
My name is Dev. I think that he was the original Oliver.
That's interesting. Or that he's Oliver's Oliver. Right? He's like, how do I get this fucking, like, sycophant away from me? No, how do I get this kid who, won't leave me alone?
I'd believe you if it weren't for that line where he says he'll get bored of you. And I'm like, oh, you've been there.
Of course he's been to it before. Yeah.
I see what you mean. I'm sorry. You mean he literally
was Felix's one of his little, yearly toys.
I thought of it more as, like, there's a pecking order and that's where Jeff is.
You're talking about, you're talking about you and Mitchell.
You and Mitchell.
Michael Gavey.
Michael Gavey, Jeff. and then above him is Oliver, and then above him is Felix.
Yeah, okay.
No,
so you
thought,
said
no, last summer Felix was hanging out with Michael.
That's my take. That's
interesting. There's some good stuff
wrong, Tom. Yeah.
In the early. There's some good stuff in the early part of the Oxford. Like I found some of that fun. I found some of it like just engaging, just like not particularly off-putting, but not like astounding either. I really liked the scene where. After Felix has blown off both Oliver and the girl and she comes looking for Felix and she finds Oliver and they start hooking up. Mm. And I did kind of have a moment where I was like, oh, this is the most predictable thing. Like we'll sleep with each other to get back at him or blah, blah, blah. And she goes, do you think this is really going to upset him? And Oliver says, honestly, I don't think he'll notice. And I was like, I don't know if I was expecting him to say that. I kind of like,
leaves,
she leaves. And I was like, and he's like, you know, what am I going to not say that? Like, I kind of liked that line. I liked him and Felix on the bridge throwing stones and the stone doesn't go in the water. He goes, well, that's a bad sign. Like, I thought that was kind of funny.
The scene with the parents bothered me.
The scene with the parents. I agree.
I love the scene with the parents. They drive in, they sing Mr. Brightside. Maybe the greatest song.
This is why you've given it an ace.
So, yeah. Just for
this is what's wrong with you.
Guys, I have this movie that I was music supervisor on. I think it's pretty good. You guys heard of MGMT? Like, yeah.
They didn't even have to hear the Killers. I thought that twist was good. I was surprised and socked. Come on. Let's keep it moving. I was fully shocked at that twist when everything he'd said was a lie. And I was like, I knew there was something weird, but I didn't think it was
going
everything.
Going back to my point about Felix being far too nice for his own good, it's like, bro, that's your opportunity to be like, you know what, Oliver, fuck off, or out him or whatever. Like,
his power play in front of his parents? No, because
driving
he is
back
nice.
And being like, mate, you've really disappointed me. Like,
good,
you know,
impression.
Yeah,
I like that scene really, with Jason Statham. I thought it was pretty good. Yeah. Mate, you've really disappointed me. You've let me down.
I'm going to transport you.
Once I'm done transporting you,
I'm a diver.
I've got to get back to my bees.
Yeah. the beekeeper.
They won't keep without me. Do you guys know what that movie's about?
No, I don't care.
We're not talking
the
about it.
The beekeeper is about Jason Statham's like a woman who gets hacked. Online, her fortune is stolen, she kills herself, and Jason Statham hunts down the people who do it to her. And he's part of a secret organization of people called the Beekeepers.
Why was that worth the last 20 seconds?
Fuck off, that movie sounds incredible.
We're doing it next week. It's going to be great.
God. Anyway, he gets back and he just kind of like, yeah, mate, I think you should leave.
Yeah, I do think he's a nice person. I don't think he has ill intent. I think he's okay. Anyway, Saltburn, I'm giving it an 8. I had a good time, guys.
I think you should
give me a break.
Change your score.
I'm never going to throw in anything.
Well, You're your own worst enemy, pal.
You know what? Talking about it, I'm impassioned. I'm going up to 8.5.
Oh, that hurts me so much.
And you guys are coming up as well, right?
No.
You guys are joining me up here?
I'm going back down into the bathtub. I prefer it down here.
Yeah, no, you do. You give the bathtub an 11.
Hey, quick mini game.
Oh,
let's go.
Please.
Let's go. Recast. We're going to play Recast. Recast. If this was made in the 80s, who would play Oliver?
Dustin Hoffman.
Probably too old by the
80s. Oh, who gives a toot, honestly?
Who would play Felix?
Dustin Hoffman? No. It can't be the same.
I mean, you could probably not Tom Cruise by that point.
Swayze?
Swayze's interesting. I'm trying to think of people from like, maybe Emilio Estevez or Charlie. Sheen. Do one with Emilio Estevez as Felix and Charlie Sheen as Oliver.
Yeah, the sexual tensions.
Yes. This is okay.
I don't know. That kind of works.
I don't like what you said. I don't really like this game so much. None of this is going well for me.
I like the 80s, though. That's a spanner. I like that.
Yeah, I think this film would have done really well in the 80s.
Yeah. I think it could have. I think it would have been more interesting. It would have been more like...
More interesting in the 80s.
It would have been more like groundbreaking
just
in the
80s. Well,
if this happened, he was breaking ground in that one scene. I don't know if you guys remember.
Wow.
So are we done, Frank? You reckon? Are we going to play the music? Oh, there's the music.
I'm sitting on a 4. I'm not moving.
4.4. This is a bad movie.
You just burped in the microphone.
Yep.
Everyone's wrong.
Way to
we're
really
right.
Put a punctuation.
And that was Saltburn.
Yeah.
Saltburn, 2023. Emerald Fennell written and directed. I think we should say.
I feel sick.
That's the
it
second
must
time.
Be his shirt.
We did Emerald Fennell twice on this pod now. She's good. Thanks for listening to Throwing the Power. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
My name's Tom.
And welcome back for season 2. That was the first one. We got a bunch more episodes coming out soon.
Yeah.
I hope.
You, with bated breath, you await those next episodes, you listener.
Bathtub
and the trough of the podcast. Eat up, piggy. Throwing the Power.